Well, good evening, everyone. We have a couple of new faces and old faithful faces. It's wonderful to see you, Nick. Been a long time.
The lake was up, it's a shame.
When I wasn't, when she was. I know that, but so let's do introductions around.
Violet.
Asana.
John.
Judy.
Shubha.
Chris.
Lake.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Tom.
Wendy.
Aurelia.
So you came with Lake, Tom.
Yes.
Yes. Good choice. And how did you hear about us?
From Yap.
Ah, see, I see.
Actually, one time you came for dinner, probably.
Yeah, and I also went up. Was she? She was over
yes,
at
first.
The.
Yeah, that's right.
Santa Cruz Mountains. What's it called?
Jikoji.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah.
You too. Welcome, all of us. I have a few more copies of this better translation of what we just chanted, because it's what we're going to be studying. I don't know how many I have left, but if anybody would like them, I think there are three of them here. So we've just begun this book. It's called Mushu Toku Mind, which means the mind of accepting everything 100%. It's the most essential part in here, as we actually chant it. Muchi yaku mu toku I mu sho toku ko bodai sata e. Thus it is mushu toku. Nothing to obtain. Nothing to get. It's hard to accept that, because we have such a mind of wanting. And of course, it's the mind that wants is the mind that wants to survive. So we want food and we want shelter and we want all the things that keep us and the human race alive. But this is about some other kind of wanting, the kind of wanting that gets out of control. So instead of shelter, we want a great big house with a swimming pool and 1,000 different wonderful things. We want massive meals that we eat instead of just a simple rice and soup. So it's very easy for our mind to go leaping forward and wanting more and more. And we live in a culture where we're able to actually indulge all of that, and at least we're surrounded by it and see it every day. And so when we come to sit Zen, of course there's the whole idea of enlightenment, and we think, well, okay, we're going to come and sit Zen and get something. We're going to get enlightened. We're going to get there. Wherever we think there is some other place, some better place, some place where we could be better people. And it doesn't quite work like that. It's a little different. What Zen really offers us is the opportunity to know ourselves really, really well. all aspects of ourself and see it clearly and realize that everybody is like this. We're not what we pretend to be. We all have a mask or a persona, and we present ourselves in the world as a certain kind of person. And we're always trying to fix it up in one way or another. We're trying to succeed in one thing and then, you know, be glad that we did it and it made us a better person somehow. And all of that is extra. It's just more than is real. We know what's real. We just, and because we get involved in trying to attain more, we get all confused and mixed up about stuff. We get big disappointments because we project out into the world what we're going to get, what we're going to do, and then it doesn't happen. Often it doesn't happen. Oh, it's a big disappointment. How can it be like this? It's not fair. Why would the world be like this? But it's a useless question because it is. It just is. And the isness of the world is what we learn in Zen, in sitting, to accept and even to appreciate even the darker places that we find in ourselves that we would rather not see. But once we face the darker places in ourselves, we're set free in a way. We don't have to hide. It's okay. We can take care of ourselves better, and we can understand other people better because everybody has a dark place, a wounded place, a place of not understanding, not knowing. And if we can appreciate that about other people, we can appreciate it about ourselves. It works both ways. And we can feel it all through life, not only in human beings, but in all the animals that we meet. They too are feeling these things, suffering these things, and we can feel with them and actually help them. So that's what this sutra is about, even though it's very ancient, and we're chanting it in Sino-Japanese, which means that it's not one language or the other, it's all mixed up. It's hard to translate. Deshi Maru was a very strong teacher in France. He came from Japan, and he was a wonderful teacher and wrote this book, because he thought it was so important for people to understand this no attaining. There is nothing to get. So he goes through it line by line, really. And we're on chapter 3 here. The Mind Sutra of Great Wisdom that enables one to go beyond is how he translates the title. That's very complicated, but he says that maka means great, hanya means wisdom, haramita, beyond, shingyo, mind sutra. That's what Violet just chanted, announcing it. Maka, hanya, haramita, shingyo. Very cool. So maka defines, he says, the essence of all that exists. everything is great. There is a greatness. It's the principle inherent in everything, both outside and inside. It's synonymous with the fundamental cosmic power that is everywhere. So he talks about this quite often, the cosmic power that's everywhere. We don't know how to talk about this. I talk about it as the untalkaboutable, because once we begin to say something about it, it gets very small. And it's really maha, it's really great. It's so great that we shouldn't even say it. But if you're writing a book, you have to say something. So he calls it the cosmic principle. The fundamental cosmic power that's everywhere, ceaselessly moving, filling the space like air, and adapting itself like water. It's invisible and without form. Hanya defines wisdom. Hanya Shingyo is the philosophy of Ku, or it's the other side of No. This is the infinite wisdom. How do we obtain infinite wisdom, this original ultimate Ku, which means No? He says, the answer is Musho Toku, the non-seeking gain or profit. Non-seeking. So often we're on our way to somewhere else in order to get something more. And this is about actually being where we are and acknowledging and accepting and appreciating it before we move on. It's not that we don't move, it's just that we don't get carried away by our seeking more than we need, by trying to get something, to add something to our beautiful life. So it's without a goal. And that's what we're told in Zen over and over. There is no goal. You come to a 7-day retreat and you, every time, it's inevitable. You go, I go, and think, okay, now it's going to be a really good sit. Wonderful. Now something is going to happen. And something always does happen in a retreat. But that isn't what we're there for. And whatever happens is not what we expect. And not what we even want often. It's something else. Because life is always giving us things that are surprising us and teaching us and not giving us what exactly we want. It's one of the best parts of life that we can't really figure it out and we can't control it. It surprises us over and over and over again. So he describes Zazen. He says Zazen is Maka Hanya, the mind's normal condition. In Zazen, external stimuli are perceived more acutely than usual. But their effects on consciousness don't last. They rapidly fade. It is the same for the feelings and emotions and thoughts that arise from the subconscious. Memories appear and disappear, quickly chased away, which is by another kind of consciousness, the mind's original condition, the consciousness that sees everything but does not grasp at anything. So when I first started to sit, I couldn't believe what was going on in my mind. I thought I was a pretty calm and collected kind of person. And instead, it was just this cacophony of chatter and gossip and fearfulness and lots of grasping and lots of wanting to get something and go somewhere. And it just blah, 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 blah. It was so annoying. But sitting for long, the mind gets really tired of all of that. The mind just does that because that's how we're made. One old teacher said it just squirts thoughts like our stomach squirts juices. It's a natural physical thing that we do. We're made to go blah, blah, blah. The trouble is that we tend to believe it. And of course, that's a mistake because very, very often it's just nonsense. Or it's just shreds. It's just shreds of things that don't add up. You can't put it together. And it's wonderful when you're sitting, you can just let it all go. Here it comes. Oh, it's gone. And you realize you don't have to get stuck in all that stuff. You don't have to believe it. You can challenge it. Is this real? Is this right? Is this true? Maybe, maybe not. But in Zazen, you don't even do that. You just let it go. And if it's a brilliant thought, it will come back after you stand up. Don't try to catch the brilliant thought while you're sitting. One time somebody brought a lot of Stanford students up to Jikoji and they had notebooks and they would be sitting there like that. Oh, they'd be writing down all the brilliant thoughts that they were getting. Then they'd go back to sitting again. No, it's not a good idea. So it's just such a nice vacation, really. It's just a relaxed way of being in the world without any striving. Just to rest and be what and who you are and where. Just this very one. In one sense, in the biggest sense, actually, when you think about it, you're the only one. And then there is everybody else. So it's very important to be extremely appreciative of what this is, that each of us is. What it is that we came and became. Our being. So much of it is a mystery. So much of it, when we think about it, it's very strange, and I think we bump up against the mystery at a certain point we can't really say. And yet we feel deeply how the world is, how the mind is in the world. So our sitting practice gives us a kind of stability and balance to be honest and careful about our life, how it is that we think, how we use our thinking, and appreciate it but not get carried away by it. A friend of mine asked me to write something about the belly. She said the belly is where the real intelligence and wisdom is, isn't it? And I said, well, yes. And she said, well, write something. So I'm trying to do that, but I've been thinking about that because we've been saying that for years in Zen. You put your mind down here where your hands are resting because this is where wisdom lies. It's been known for thousands of years. Now they've found it. So the vagus nerve and all the nerves that go with it, this is where wisdom lies. and here and around the heart. There is intelligence in the heart and the belly. And then here is the blah, blah, blah. You know, and this is what got us up to airplanes in the sky. This is what got us submarines under the ocean. It's not nothing by any means. It's just misleading if we get carried away by and forget about this part and this part. This is known as the Heart Sutra for a very good reason. So Dogen wrote a poem, "Ripples ceaselessly form at the stream's surface, but they cannot efface the reflection of the moon, which has made its home there." So the mind is always rippling, always going, going, going. But the moon has made its home deeper. He says, obviously we can't cut off our illusions once and for all. It'd be nice to think we could. That would mean death, he says. Life itself is made up of the illusions. We can, however, control them by observing and understanding them with vigilant awareness, and in so doing, decrease them. This is why there's no need to be proud of good actions nor to hate our bad ones. We should be full of compassion for people dominated by illusions, either through lack of awareness or through weakness. And we know people like that. Makahanya, this infinite wisdom without attachment, ultimately means the mind's attitude toward life and death, an attitude of neither grasping nor fleeing, an attitude beyond life and death. Everyone believes they possess their own mind. It's my mind. It's mine. They think this mind creates their suffering, their burdens, or their joy. This may be truer than hating the world as the cause of our tribulations. However, whether through mental or physical pain, suffering is caused by attachment to the ego, an erroneous belief in a personal entity. This is the error of fixation, the ignorant belief in the ego's permanence. It's not that there isn't an ego. Everybody has an ego, but we think it's a fixed thing. It's just the same all the time and will never change, and it will go on forever. We will never die. We couldn't possibly die because we are who we are. Ta-da. But the truth is that it's a very ephemeral thing. Who we are changes, has changed from the moment of conception, really, over and over and over again. We just forget. So if we're very hubristic, we can say, well, this is me. This is the great me. And get in a lot of trouble because other people say the same thing, and then you can get into all kinds of conflict, which human being tends to do. He says, what is the mind? Mind is without entity, indefinable, unplaceable, without noumenon. This is how it is described in Buddhism. I am always talking, he says, about the fundamental cosmic power, the one mind, the omnipresent mind that fills the cosmos and governs all phenomena and human consciousness. then Haramita means the beyond, the ideal, the ultimate, the totality of all that is. Haramita, paramita in Sanskrit, is the most excellent practice. And Shingyo means the essence of the sutras, the essential sutra. So this sutra, called the Heart Sutra or the Prajnaparamita Sutra, is the condensation of many, many books, also called the Prajnaparamita. Kanza, an early translator, translated many of those long, long paramitas, which all say the same thing that this little tiny one that we just chanted says in 5 minutes. So we inherited this from India to brave Chinese people who went to India cross country and brought it back, memorized it and kept chanting it to themselves and brought it back and then taught it to people in China, and Chinese taught it to Koreans and Japanese and everybody else. So somehow it came to us. So there's time for a few questions. Leek?
I have a question. So why wisdom cannot be transferred from one person to another person, like knowledge?
That's what wisdom is. It's indefatigably yours only. We can't share wisdom, but we can be wisdom together. In fact, if we meet in that world of wisdom, the living part is between us. It's the between. It's the part we can't see. He says the invisible part. It's not a thing. It's the mind itself. So we meet each other, you and I, but you and I each meet whatever comes to our life as well. So, and not just people, but, you know, the sidewalk and the grass and the trees and the stars and everything. Each meeting is that. Each meeting is wisdom, the between. Judy.
So as I sit, the thoughts come in and out, I let them go, yet I'm aware it's almost like there's two of me.
Yeah.
Right? Because these thoughts are coming, but from where? Because it's not me. It is me, but it's not me, and yet there's something else that's observing.
Yes, they call that the witness. And after a while, even the witness gets bored. Mm-hmm. So first you're watching, and all the blah blah goes by, and some of it's very interesting, and some of it is very disturbing, and etc. Mm-hmm. But then after a while, the witness just can care less, really. It's just not interesting anymore.
Right.
Because it's not real.
Right.
None of it is real. The only thing is real is just all of this, where everything happened to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So So sometimes when people have disturbing mind, I say you can bow to it. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for coming by. You know, there are parts of our mind that bug us. You know, say you're not doing very well. You could do better. What's the matter with you? All those kind of things. And those are usually left over from way before, when we were small and people were trying to help us, to bringing us up in a better way. So, but we end up with all these things and it's not very helpful. It just feels bad. So you can just bow to it and say, oh, thank you very much for taking care of me. Such good care. And let it go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah?
Yeah, I was just curious, you know, when you sit and all these thoughts come by, how disciplined do you need to be about your thoughts?
You need to have some discipline. It helps to have some discipline. But it's a different kind of discipline from bossing yourself around. You need to be kind to yourself and just bring yourself back to being the body, being the breath. Because if you get into what's going on, it's useless. It's just, as Coben said, it's all lies. So why bother with it? The real thing is your breath, the beating of your heart, and how you are holding your body. So, and that's really quite absorbing. If you can bring yourself back to your breath over and over again, you can just really be present and feel the wholeness of being alive without having to think it. We're so highly trained in thinking. You know, we think all the time, and we think really well. We've been trained, but we don't have to. We can just let it go. Say, I'll do it later. We don't like to not think. But it feels like we're giving up something, or we're going to die, or in a way, or something, because that's how we know who we are. But it isn't how we know who we are. The real way we know how we are is how we feel, how we actually are experiencing. And that's what Zazen gives us, is the experience of being a living body in the world. All right.
Yes, you know, our cognitive process is very much like a mirroring system. So, meaning we change as the world around us changes.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, ever since we are born, we are being programmed to become a picture and not a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So we always want to create a pixelated picture of ourselves that's very fixated. It's not a mirror, it's just like a picture. And because we don't move much and the world around us doesn't change as much, we get used to that picture. And we think that's what we are. And it has a name, a family name, a religion, a nationality, all of those things that make the picture perfectly fine. But I guess that's the confusion, and every time I read this, I think it's really encouraging us to going back to that mirroring, the original wiring of the brain.
Yes.
Because we were born in an island with no one around us to program us, that's what we'd be. So
we wouldn't know who we were.
Exactly.
Anyway,
so right? Changing as we change.
Yes.
So when we get older, we want to kind of deprogram ourselves and go back to that mirroring again.
Yes.
And this practice really helps going back to that.
It does. It does, exactly.
Egoless mirror.
Yes. Yes. We don't have to be something. Be someone. those are just thoughts. And we can change it. We can pretend to be some any kind of thing. Well, it's 8 o'clock, so it's after 8 o'clock. I'm sorry. So we must stop. But thank you all. Very interesting discussion. Announcements?
I'm still working on that calendar. Getting it out pretty soon.
We're trying to figure things out a bit.
Yes.
Yeah. The Quakers are making it a little difficult for us. So we're trying to figure out how to manage. They've upped the rent a lot. So it doesn't look like we can do our weekends here, our Saturdays. We'll have to do them somewhere else.
At least some of them. Yes.
Well, so let's do our 1 minute sit.